All right, so good evening, everyone. Welcome. So I'm going to continue with this theme of social engagement and talk about racism tonight. And Tweri was excited to have me talk about this for various reasons. I think a lot of it is, you know, mostly our Sangha tends to be white. It's changing. There's getting more and more BIPOC people here, both in person and online. And yet there's a predominance of whiteness. And so I think it's helpful to speak as a white teacher, a white male, to this topic, to see how we can actually both deepen into it, but also use it as a way to open into the Dharma, open into our own liberation. And this last year, a number of us, about 28 of us, went through this year-long program with Ruth King, exploring mindfulness of race. And we met every month and had different classes with her. And also the board at the same time did a year-long process, or almost a year, focusing on white fragility, D'Angelo's book. So I think it's been a very helpful year as the board starts to deepen into this and as some of the individuals on the Sangha also. And when we hear the word racism, we often think of kind of the overt, aggressive manifestations of that. We think of people, you know, with those funny hats and the tattoos and all that, that kind of overt, violent expression of it, the oppressive expression of it. There can arise this urgency to act, to try to change that, to do something about it, which is vitally important. However, if we just focus on those blatant aspects of racism, we can really miss an essential issue, that those overt, very destructive expressions are just part of this whole spectrum that we ourselves, as white people, have that in our own hearts. If you think of it just out there, we miss the fact that there's this seed within our own minds, our own hearts, and how those overt expressions of racism are part of a system that permeates our society, in our hearts and our minds. And as white people, we definitely participate and benefit in profound ways. As people who are non-white, of BIPOCs, they feel their oppression, their aggression, the danger on a daily basis. So it's a very important thing to unpack, to understand, to deepen into, and to transform. So I'm going to tend to use the word BIPOC, which stands for Black, Indigenous, People of Color. So it's a more, it acknowledges that there's different people who are not white experience racism in different ways. There's different degrees of experiencing it, you know, particularly, you know, Blacks and Indigenous people have had, you know, devastating effects from that. And not to discount their brown skin, Asian people's experience also. So as we start to explore this topic of racism, as I said, we had about four groups from SIMS who participate in this, four out of 44. It's almost 10%. And two of the groups in that whole 44 were all white male, so groups of seven. And one of them was from our Sangha. So I'm excited. I was encouraged by that, but also discouraged that so few white males are willing to participate, because so many of us, I mean, as white males, we need to carry this burden in much way to understand our role. Even though I've been involved with diversity training through the big initiatives, through IMS and Spirit Rock over these last 10 years, there's something about going through that year-long process with a group of people. So I did it with our board and also with my own racial affinity group. We started to deepen in our own trust, our own sense of safety around this topic, and are able to share in deeper and deeper ways to understand some of the unseen implications and to hold each other in our shame and our embarrassment and our hurt. And it was very helpful to have that meditative practice as a way to explore and to balance and to hold what was coming up. And Sims will continue to offer and deepen our understanding of racism in both leadership, the board members, the LDLs, but also in the general members. We have a strong commitment to doing that this next year and probably for the next 10 or 20 years. So we might ask ourselves, why is racism, working around racism and diversity, Dharma work? Now, I'll define racism in a second more in detail, but we can think about racism as really the harm that is caused, the harm that is caused by the system, by the society, by the individual. And I can hold diversity as this quality of welcoming, enriching our communities with different perspectives and backgrounds, including race. So why is it important for us as a Dharma organization, as Dharma practitioners, to engage in this understanding, this work, this self-inquiry around racism and diversity? First of all, it benefits the precept of non-harm. It allows us to understand in more and more deep ways how harm is caused toward others who we hold as other, who create a sense of separation through race, through our prejudice, through our unconscious biases, to understand the harm that's caused in subtle ways and that just that way of holding someone else, to the microaggressions, to the outright oppression, to the outright violence, and how that also is a form of harm for ourselves. How we create a quality of harm in our own hearts and minds when we separate someone else out as being less than or even different than. Understanding working with racism and diversity also helps us understand a deep level of conditioning, learning to free ourselves from this conditioning we often focus on the personal conditioning that we carry, the sense of maybe family of origin, the sense of inadequacy, the sense of, wanting, not wanting, all these ways that we try to unpack that, to understand that, and how that generates dukkha, how it creates that sense of contraction of self, that painful self that we've been exploring so much over these last couple years, last 20 years, and learning to free the moment from that momentum of our conditioning. That's so much of our practice. How do we come back to what's here right now instead of what we've added to this moment, what we've created and from our past history, our past actions? Learning to really free that moment from our conditioning so we can become fully available to how life is arising. So racism is a societal, cultural and personal conditioning that we carry in how we really view and create the world, how we create another idea of another person. Just realized I jumped ahead a page. That's funny. So let's just continue with that topic for a second. So back to that sense of conditioning. So it's part of this world making of self-making, how we think of dependent origination as this individual process of creating its own sense of self. It happens on a societal way and a cultural way. And also that culture influences how that takes form. And finally, working with racism and diversity, we start to understand how we create that sense of self and how the mirror image of what is considered the other person. And racism is one of those things that really creates a stronger sense of the other person. These all circle back to harm, how we create harm in the world. Now, if you look around, the typical Dharma Center, like even looking around ours and looking at those online, you know, there's a predominance of white people, white folk. And there's nothing wrong with that. And yet there's also a surprising absence of BIPOC people. This isn't just Sims, not just Seattle. We see it across the country. And centers started to wake up to this. They started to realize that and say, why is that? You know, why we make it freely offered, the Dharma, to everyone? Why aren't BIPOC people coming? You know, people who practice meditation are nice people, right? We should be welcoming and accepting. And we don't realize how there's this really pervasive quality of being unwelcoming that's so close to our skins, we don't even realize that. This is part of the systemic quality process of racism. It's a part that's invisible to us as white people, and it's not invisible at all to those who are BIPOC. They experience it every day, that rub, that push, that aggression, that difficulty. And this is the work of waking up to that invisible quality as a white person. My teaching colleague, Bonnie Duran, who's here in Seattle, who's a Native American woman and professor at the U, she once told me that she was trying to explain to me how when you come to the center, a Dharma Center, it's not a level playing field if you're a BIPOC person. If you come as a white person, it feels, it's a level platform. I might feel a little nervous. I might not feel like I belong. But if you're a BIPOC person, there's this whole other layer of okay, I don't quite fit in. And then, of course, that's reinforced by how we act, how we behave. So Dharma Center started to work on this issue about 10 or 15 years ago. And it's been such an important focus and to help understand and heal these issues around racism. And there's been some very important and concrete steps taken. And it's a process. It's a beginning. You know, my own journey, as I mentioned, going through this last year and then working with diversity issues for the last 10 years, it's always humbling how much there is to learn, how much there is to see, and to be able to see more and more clearly. And looking back and seeing my own journey from, you know, first that quality of initial denial, like, there's no way I can't be racist. I'm a good person. You know, then there's the defensiveness, like, no, you have to prove to you that I'm not racist. Justification of that. And then finally, the guilt and the shame as that started to sink in. And then finally, acceptance. And then from that acceptance to start to not have to spend so much energy defending against, but to actually listen and open to and observe. So what is racism? You know, this word for many of us is a very charged word. We tend to think, as I, you know, initially did for a long, many years, thought of it as if you're a racist, you're a bad person. You know, that you're an evil person. You're a person who's overtly causing harm, consciously, actively oppressing and harming others, holding others as less than. And more, even worse, convinced of the rightness of those beliefs. Sorry, I'm just going to adjust this for a second. And so this sets up a fundamental conflict, because if we believe ourselves as primarily a good person, understanding my racist background doesn't make any sense. It doesn't fit with that self-belief. This becomes a major barrier that so many of us who are or white have to face. Have to learn how to go through our denial, our defensiveness, to get through feeling insulted if someone confronts us in something being racist, because we can't hear that feedback. So learning to broaden that understanding, broaden what it means to be racist, that it's not just people who are bad, it's people who are well-intentioned, who have good hearts, but have been deeply conditioned into this society. Is basically every one of us who's white, you know, people of color, BIPOCs have their own relationship to that. And now I can't speak to that because of my own, of course, that's not my experience, but I'll speak to it the best I can. So seeing racism not as an individual's act or belief, but much more as the system that's really deeply ingrained beliefs in the superiority of some based on others on skin color, reinforced with policies and laws, further reinforced with how you lending practices, how trials happen. All these things are kind of behind the surface that we don't even realize are happening. So we start to see how we all are racist. And once you let that in, once you kind of get through your initial guilt and shame about it, you realize, okay, I'm not bad as a person. I just have something I need to learn from, to explore, to become more aware of in a way that I no longer cause harm. You start to learn from it and not act from it. Another aspect, this is part of kind of what I've learned over the years in Kinnick through this last year, is understanding the systemic nature of racism. And also we could say white supremacy, of dominance. And this, again, white supremacy, we hear that and we, you know, get these visions of these extremist groups. And, you know, so, okay, that's not who I am. That's not what I am. But again, that discounts the ability to see clearly that there is a pervasive white supremacy in our culture. Another way to say it is how we define what's normal, how we define what's the normal way or the right way to do something. We don't realize that it's embedded in our white culture, in our white way of viewing things, our assumptions. For most of us, that's the European, white European model. Look at it in terms of time. Is it good to be on time or good to be late? That's a white culture. You know, is it good to be, there's so many different ways we can explore those cultural pieces. And because it's our normal way, there's not that friction that we would feel. We just kind of, everything just flows the way we think it should flow. So there's a frictionless way that we go through society. Now, if you're a BIPOC person, if your culture is different than that dominant culture, you feel the friction all the time. And it's hard to say that the depth of the oppression around that you can't be who you really are, because the whole culture, everyone around you, not only the people, but the laws, the law enforcement, I mean, everything is enforced around this particular way of being. And if you don't fit in with that, you know, you're denied in a very essential way. People who are also marginalized, people who are not straight, who are not heterosexual, who are not able-bodied, people who, even women, all can experience this way of being marginalized, of being denied. So I know many of us know that very personally. And those of us who, because we're, just to say it, white males, may not notice it in the same way. But just imagine that the last time you felt denied in a very deep, fundamental way of who you are. Now imagine that's your normal way of being in the world, your normal experience of being in the world. And so it's hard as a white person to see that level of pervasiveness of the systemic nature. It's really, you notice it if you go to a different culture or even a subculture in our country, like going to like an Asian market, for example, or going to a Hispanic market and you're the only white person there. You feel awkward. You feel like you don't belong. Tori and Dara took Dara out to eat last time she was here, and they took me to this all black, you know, it was a basically all black restaurant. And I was like the only white guy there. And it was really interesting to feel that, kind of holding my breath and trying to not be offensive, but not trying, you know, it's very awkward to feel that. You know, that's just a little taste, what people go through. You travel to a different country, you know, you get confronted again with how the American way, really the white way, is different, not held universally. I think that's the biggest thing, is there's this assumption that there's this universal truth that everyone agrees to. But we don't realize how relative that is, how relative it is to a white person's condition. And once you start to wake up to that, see how you start to free yourself in the from a dharmic standpoint. You're not so constrained with, oh, I have to, this is how things really have to be. You realize, oh, life can be very different ways. It allows you to be much more available to how the moment is actually presenting itself, including interpersonally, including interracially. And so often when we come to a meditation center, we don't realize that we've set it up so it feels very comfortable to us. We don't realize that, oh, this is a comfort to a white mind. And when the centers first started some 50 years ago, it was white people who set them up. You know, in Sims, it's the same thing. So there's that quality of it being just embedded in. And related to this is the white privilege that we experience, that how doors just naturally open. We don't even realize they were even ever closed, that even there was a door. Things just flow through. Again, if you ever had a chance to talk closely to someone who's not that way, who's not white, I should just say a BIPOC, they see how much friction they have as they go through life, how many doors are closed. I remember Tori talking about, you know, going to basically any store, and they assign someone to follow her around and make sure she doesn't shoplift. You know, someone who's a lawyer, is highly trained professional, and that's just because of color of skin. That's the prejudices that she puts on. I don't think I've ever had anyone follow me to see if I'm shoplifting, unless I'm for some reason really dressed poorly. But it's just this basic assumption. White person, don't worry. Black person, worry. So it's a very, this trying to again get that, many of us know this, but just to take it in more and more. Racial bias. You know, racial bias. As meditators, we have this capacity to start to unhook our reactivity and see it and examine it in a much clearer way. To see how that reactivity starts and not to follow it down to its conclusion. Okay, so racial bias. So remember our exploration of dependent origination, and we talk about a point of contact of a sense data, like a bell. Hear the bell, and there's an initial acknowledgement of the bell, and then right away floods in all this association, all these ideas, but what the bell means. Okay, if the bell means it's time to get up from the sitting, and it's been a beautiful sitting, and it feels like it could just go on forever, and you're inches away, moments away from awakening, the bell was considered unpleasant. It's like there's unpleasant vedana to it. If your body is aching and you just can't wait to stretch your legs, the vedana is negative. And then, of course, there's a whole mind state that comes from that, a whole sense of self that grows from that. Okay, so now let's take it into race. Okay, so notice next time you see someone who looks different than you, different skin color, and you can take this in any way. You know, take it body size, you can take it being able-bodied, you can take it in terms of sexual preference, gender, whatever it is. But let's take race for a moment. And notice when you see someone who's a different race, what's that very first moment arise with that? You know, I would notice that I would see someone who is black, for example, and there would be this moment of that's been considered unpleasant. And I'm like, wow, that is, I would just horrify to see that, to see that moment of unpleasantness arise. I didn't want it to be there. I wanted to get rid of it. I wanted not to have that. And yet there's some deep conditioning that arose from that. But then what you do once you see that, that's what's so important. If you're not conscious to it, what happens? Unpleasant. Then suddenly you find yourself getting reactive, getting tense. Oh, I'm scared. If you're a police officer, maybe you're more likely to pull your firearm because of the fear just gets amplified from already a stressful situation. So start to notice how that Vedana leads to clinging, to craving. Okay, this is a real life application of the dependent origination. And so when you see that arise, pause and say, oh, let me look. What I do is I look closer and I see, okay, that's just this overlay, this condition, cultural overlay. Let me look closely at who this person actually is to see through my delusion, my unconscious projection on this person, to see who they actually are and to go even further and interact, treat them as a human being, as an equal human being. It starts to slowly dissolve that conditioning. As we talk about this, I'm talking about it from a very much an individual exploration, individual seeing. And we often say, well, what about the big societal things? I always believe that understanding your own ignorance, your own delusion, your own racism, really owning that, really exploring it, unpacking it, makes you much more effective in the world. Because you understand, what you're really up against and what needs to change is not just a change of a law. It needs to be really a changing of the mind, changing something very fundamental. And so it gives you much more ability to understand someone who you're trying to influence, some change you're trying to have, trying to affect. Another common thing that comes up with this kind of a white perspective versus a BIPOC perspective is individual versus group. So often in these trainings and this work, you realize how as a white person, I tend to always fall back on the individual perspective. Well, I'm having this, so this is my background, this is your background, trying to see the person as an individual. Okay, again, that's the advantage of being part of the dominant culture. I can kind of ignore the fact that I am part of a culture. I am part of a white race, my white experience. And so then I can focus on an individual. But if you're not of that, if you're one of the marginalized groups, the group becomes much more important. That's really the group focus comes up more and more, how that identity and how that experience is shared as the group. And if your mind is all like me, if you happen to be white, you tend to ignore the group and you tend to focus on the individual. That takes the predominance, the precedence, the prevalent way of relating. And then finally, the sense of what I think Ruth King called this, the star versus constellation. So as a white person, when I see an event like a police shooting or racial profiling or violence toward an Asian person, I see it as an isolated event, not just one thing. That was one bad person interacting with that other person. But, as a BIPOC person, because of their whole life history, because of all their experiences, they see it not as one isolated star, but as part of this whole constellation, this whole pattern that just fits in with this whole thing. And that's not, it's basically based on what they experience day in and day out. These are all ways of just understanding kind of the systemic power of racism, how much it permeates our lives, whether we are white or black. As white people, we benefit. We can relax with it. So this is how things are supposed to be. Of course, it feels right because it's white. Well, if you're not white, you feel the oppression, you feel the harm. So just to wrap this exploration up before we have a chance for some sharing and questions. So as a guiding teacher, I'm committed to having Sims grow an understanding around racism and learning to start to welcome diversity more and more. Because racism is really this harm that we cause unconsciously through our microaggressions, through our way of holding someone as other, through our own, not owning our own fragility, our own racism. And then diversity, the willingness to stretch beyond what we think is normal, the normal white way. Not asking a BIPOC person to conform to how we think things should be, but actually being willing to be transformed by the diversity, to actually enrich and grow so things take a different way. You know, Buddhism's always been transformed by the culture it encounters and also transforms that culture. So as it went to the different cultures, it took on different flavors, different elements to it. As it came to the West, it took on, you know, many different elements. And one of them was this kind of unconscious quality of racism, this white supremacy. And it will adapt again and change as we heal that division in our minds and hearts. So at Sims, you can keep an eye out on our newsletter. If you're not on that, get on that mailing list, because that's where we'll communicate as well as at these, our sits. We're going to offer ways to engage in diversity work and anti-racism work. And it is a process. You know, we have to be willing to go through our denials, our defensiveness, our arguments, our justifications, our shame, our guilt, and learning to have a quality of openness of heart. And for the BIPOC people who are present, we're also going to encourage groups of affinity that you can meet with people who are not white to start to feel that, be able to air those areas that the Dharma has harmed you, or the ways the organizations have harmed you, and ways of starting to grow in confidence in your own practice, to see that the Dharma is your home as much as anyone's home. And also allow us to learn how to shift and change the organization. So it's all learning about to find that quality of acceptance, of true learning, to see through our conditioning, to allow our world to transform, to see how life actually is, not through the lens of racism, of division, of otherness. And it's a process. And so we need patience and we need steadiness. We need the willingness to not feel like we have to do it all at once, because this is a very huge amount of delusion that we're tackling, that we're working through. So having compassion for yourselves as we engage in this important work. All right, if you could just sit quietly for a few moments, letting those words settle. All right, thank you for your attention. And now we have a chance for any questions or sharing that you'd like to have. And we have both our online audience and an in-person audience. So let's see if there's someone online who'd like to share something or ask something. And you can probably raise your virtual hand if you know how to do that. Do they have ability to unmute? Or you could just unmute. All right, anyone on the line like to share anything or ask anything?
Jim?
Okay, Iris, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to deeply express my deep gratitude for this talk tonight and for your willingness in addressing this important topic. And it really feels like a fresh beginning for Sims. And also just to reference last Friday night's event with Sofu Jones Corte, who's an African American rapper and Dharma teacher, and he did a fundraiser for us, and talk about a different cultural experience. It was marvelous and just so full of joy and depth. And the idea of diversifying our Sangha is so exciting and will be of benefit to all, no doubt. Thank you.
Thank you, Iris. I'm trying to mute and unmute because it's better if I mute.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, so, thank you, Iris. Yeah, that's a great example of, you know, we sometimes get so caught up in, sorry, the speaker keeps shifting, you know, working on racism and working on trying to heal that, which is really important and vital. We have to do that. And it's really also equally beneficial to listen to someone who's, you know, like the teacher on Friday, or to listen to Tuareg, or listen to Venerable Panawati, to listen to someone who is not a white person as they teach, and how that really offers a depth of understanding that often is, it shows you parts of yourself if you're not white. I mean, if you are white, that you haven't really thought of. It's like, oh, that's a different way of expressing the Dharma. It really enriches your understanding of the Dharma. And if you're a BIPOC, you can also, there's similar enriching. There's a simple, similar affirmation of how the Dharma can stretch to hold these different ways of expression, of really experiencing, hearing, and teaching the Dharma. So let me see if there's anyone here in the room. These are all kind of surrounding me. All right, I'm not seeing any hands. Let's go back online. Anyone like to share anything or ask anything? All right, Sean and Bruce.
Yeah. Hi, Tim. Bruce and I live in a pretty large retirement community, probably close to 300 people, and everybody is white. And we live in Gig Harbor, and Gig Harbor is really white. And just recently, we had a couple move in, biracial couple. The man black, the woman white. And I haven't really had an opportunity to get to know them, but I met them briefly. And the other day, Bruce and I were outside, and we saw, his name is Edgar. We saw him. He was greeting some family coming in to visit. And we were saying hello and just kind of, you know, chit-chatting. And I noticed in my mind, very aware that he is black. I mean, it's just like right there. Not like he is black and that any judgment about it, but that he is black and I am white. And I have this curiosity of what it's like for him, a black man, to be living in an all-white community. And I would love to ask him, but I'm afraid to. I'm afraid to express that curiosity because it might be offensive. And I wish I could, you know, because I'm really curious. I would really like to know what that experience is like. And I don't know, that's just what I wanted to share, because there's only one person living here that's black, and it's just very strange. I wish we would get more black people, but this is the way it is.
All right, thank you for sharing that, Sean. Yes, it's, I would, you know, lead with connection, you know, lead with getting to know the person and seeing if there's a quality of availability, because, you know, sometimes, you know, people of color, BIPOC people have to carry this burden of explaining to white people what it's like, you know, understanding. And it gets really heavy. They have to always explain that, always educate someone to try, you know, whether they are willing to or not. And it's quite a burden. But I could see that if it's, you know, if you ask from a really a place of curiosity without any kind of, you know, sense of superiority, but just curiosity, because it's acknowledging something that's true. you know, he might actually really appreciate that you're willing to talk about that. I think that's something that, like this last year of exploration, you know, remarked to my fellow white people on these groups is like, we don't usually talk about what it means to be white. You know, what is that like to be white? But if you're Black, if you're Asian, if you're Latino, if whatever non, you know, BIPOC person, you talk about how it is to be in being defined in that way, what that experience is like. So in other words, you know, they're much more comfortable talking about race within their own racial groups. So, you know, I would just kind of feel it, you know, gently into it. But part of that awkwardness, we have to learn to kind of get through that awkwardness and just realize, you know, be willing to listen, you know, with your whole body. Like, oh, if I'm being obtrusive, if I'm being pushy, if I'm being noisy, or if I'm, you know, just notice that. And you can, you know, you can trust that sensitivity. But I think that awkwardness, it's, you know, for us to heal, we have to be able to talk about race. We have to be able to explore it. And as a white person, we need to do our work so we don't cause harm while we do those conversations. And it's easy to, and, you know, hopefully there'll be enough rapport established that you can repair those. You can talk about that.
Yeah. Right, so. Just another comment I just want to say quickly is that, as I was listening to your talk, I was listening through my own filter of being somebody who is not able-bodied. And, there's just a lot of similarities. There's just a lot of similarities. And for me, I wasn't always this way. You know, I mean, for the first part of my life, I was an able-bodied go-getting person. And now I'm not. And, but I still think of myself a lot of times in my mind as being that way. But I, you know, I know physically I'm not. And I just feel, you know, I can just feel and have experienced a lot of interesting, I'll put it that way, reactions that people have when you're not able-bodied and you're either sitting in a wheelchair or you're using a scooter or, yeah, there's a whole range of reactions. So, yeah, being the other can be very, very interesting experience.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So, you know, use that experience to give you empathy, to get you understanding that you understand a little bit more what it's like to be the only Black man in a whole community of whites or a whole city of whites in Gig Harbor. And just to realize, oh, wow, and he lived with that his whole life. It's not, he doesn't have that memory of what it was like not to. So I think that can be really helpful. I think that's the gift of, it's not really, you know, it's a kind of not a fun gift, but it's that empathy of being not able-bodied. You know, you learn a little bit of that empathy. You know, I think women have that same gift too, because they've, you know, every woman I think has been oppressed in some way. So you have both of those elements, and you know, you learn to hold that, to work with that, and learn it to inform, use it to inform your how you relate across the racial divide that we have in our hearts and our minds.
Thanks for the talk, Tim. It was really good.
You're welcome, Sean. Yourself. Okay, go get it.
I think we need a lot more conversation of this nature, because we need candor about this topic, all of us. I was in one of these groups that Tim was referring to over this last year with the board. And one of the most helpful transformative things for me out of this past year was to ask myself to remember that I'm a white person. Just the fact of the color of my skin is white. It plugs back in a lot to, you know, what you were talking about, Tim, about white people. We see ourselves as individuals. Our culture elevates that individualism. And I just, this invisibility of being white is really, it's like like Robin DiAngelo would often say, you know, we just, it's the water that we swim in and we don't see it. It's invisible to us. But indeed, I have an impact in the world as a white person. And I just need to take recognition of that. Not that it's a negative thing. Not that it's a positive thing. It's just a thing. But I happen to be white. And that has been really, really transformative to me. And it's still even shocking to me that I have to take pains to remember that. That's how strong the invisibility is, and my privilege as a white person, and everything that flows from that, you know. So it's been such an interesting journey, and I strongly wish to continue it through the Sangha, and I know that it will continue. Yeah, it just takes me aback. You know, I pay more attention now to news articles about police shootings. I have to say, I'm not proud of this, but in the past, I would just sort of glaze over those things. Oh, yeah, another shooting of a person. Well, something must have happened. And now I'm paused more, and I think, well, I wonder what was going on. You know, what are the forces that go into that? So this curiosity has come up, as well as a fair amount of shame, which is not necessarily useful, but there it is. So it's just coming to grips with these things, you know, and wishing to be a more sensitive person, less oblivious. It's not always so comfortable, but I think it's really so important. So I appreciate the Sangha's efforts and, you know, emphasis on this issue.
Great. Thank you, Deb. Were you able to hear that online? That's great. Thank you, Cheryl. That's amazing. Yeah, so that's a nice heartfelt expression of really the growth of, and I, you know, Deb, as she mentioned, she was part of this year-long process. And I think, you know, just like with meditation, we learn how to continue to come back, you know, day after day, and we get to see ourselves meet those demons, meet those restrictions, and having that the culture, you know, the container and support of your fellow group members allowed that to deepen. You know, and so each month coming back, and I definitely saw Deb's growth over this month, and I think she hopefully saw some of my growth too. So that's, thank you for sharing that, Deb. And it's a process. I know it's, for the BIPOC people, it's probably like, well, it's about time that you started this. And it's a process, and it will probably be at least a decade or so before we really feel that shift, maybe be less than that. But I kind of look at it as a long-term commitment because it's deep. All right. Anyone else like to share online, in person? Yes, Alice. Great. So we got someone online or in person. No, go ahead. I'm just getting a little confused where I am. I'm on Zoom. Am I here?
I wanted to share because I was just listening to, like, what Deb was saying and also what Sean was saying earlier about the moment or reminding yourself of,
you may hold that little
reminding yourself that of what race you are. And by contrast, as a person of color, it's speaking from my experience, I never forget that I'm not white. And it's so visible to me all the time, obviously, when I look around, but also on TV and in magazines. And I noticed myself being like overjoyed now, seeing like, oh my goodness, there's so many things made by Asian people on Netflix now. There's movies about Asian Americans, you know. And down to little things like, you know, buying Band-Aids and nude colored things. It's not nude to me. It's not, you know, when I wear it, it stands out as much as if I'm wearing a, you know, neon yellow or something. And so I didn't realize my own biases and prejudices until I was in college and starting to be a teacher and learning about social justice. And I had the idea in my head that, well, of course I'm not racist. You know, I'm a person of color. I understand what that's like. I wouldn't be overtly racist to anybody. But it wasn't until we had to reflect on, like you said, kind of the spectrum of what racism looks like, and understanding that even within BIPOC communities, there is a lot of racism. Even among that, as an Asian person, there's a lot of expectations and stigma of you should aspire to be like white people. You know, you keep your head down, you study, you do well, you're expected to, you know, Asian people are the good minorities, the model minorities. And even within my own family, my parents are very racist towards black people. And it would have been horrible. Oh, never date a black guy kind of a thing, you know? And so, even today, well, meditation has helped me a lot to be less reactive when I have to, not confront, but when I have to navigate the racism in my own community. And also navigating not being white to the point where, you know, as a young adult, I very deliberately have a lot of very visible tattoos and I don't look like a very stereotypical Asian woman. Part of that is self-protection. No one will wonder whether I'm able to be, you know, an easy target. Is this Asian woman going to fight back? Damn right, I'm going to fight back. And so it's a weird thing to navigate this, you know, in between sort of, you know, and on the one hand, trying to explain to my community or my family that Black and Hispanic people are not what the media and, you know, systemic racism has conditioned you to believe that they are. And having the patience to both speak as a person of color to white people and patiently describing, well, just because you recognize your privilege does not mean that you're a bad person or that you're racist. We all have prejudices, and that's what we're here to explore. And at the same time, trying to explain to the, you know, my Asian community that the fear that you're experiencing is a conditioned thing. It's not reality. And so, you know, just want to share that as a kind of a in-between experience.
Thank you so much, Alice. It's a really articulate way of describing that. It was, you know, those worlds of both being a person of color and, you know, that rub against the white world, and just the, I've often reflected that you look at ads and it's like, you know, it's always a white person. It's, you know, and it's, you know, it's slowly changing, but it's still very much the predominance. And so how discounting that is. And then to also speak from that, you know, being an Asian person, to see how that also show, you know, it's like, you're not, you know, there's also the interracial racism. And, you know, I guess the big difference is that the racism from an Asian person doesn't have that same power of society behind it. You know, you don't have that same momentum. Like my racism has everybody else kind of just massive power behind it. And yours is, you know, it's the different quality between, you know, it doesn't have that systemic power, but it still is very much affected by it. So thank you for sharing that. It's been very helpful. Anyone else online who might be BIPOC or person of color would like to share anything? Give you a space for that. Not to put you on the spot, but just to invite that. All right. Anyone else like to share anything? Yes, go ahead. And there, yeah, if you don't mind, that way they can hear you online.
I don't have a lot to say. I've just been really appreciate the whole idea about the welcoming, unwelcoming. It's one thing I've been noticing over the past couple of years is really noticing white spaces. That I'm realizing with a bit of embarrassment that I didn't pay attention to being in white spaces before. And it comes up, not so much a place like this, of course, a place like this, but outdoor activities, like what makes this a white space? And that's all really interesting. It, you know, just ask, you know, the question about what are, you know, are we creating spaces that can be welcoming to everybody. I'm also very aware, and this isn't something we really talked about today, of does just that term white deny us our culture? I mean, I am very aware of a very specific European culture. I call myself Euro. I don't like the term white. And I know there's a necessity of realizing that what whiteness does, but it just really bugs me that using that term sort of denies those of us of European ancestry of our very specific cultures.
Yes, thank you for sharing that. And that's understanding our specific culture, I think, is very helpful, because that, you know, that it's not just an abstract thing. It really shapes how we see the world, how we react to the world, you know, what we resonate with, what we don't resonate with. So I think that's just like the term, you know, people of color and white. It's like there's so many different ways that's expressed, different experiences in that. And also the sense of the white space, you know, and that's when we build the place downstairs, we want to really take that in account. You know, what is the space? Because if we don't get a feedback, we're just going to naturally do, this feels good to you. Do you like it, Rob? Yeah. You know, because it's like, you know, we don't see the blindness. So that's a good reminder. All right. Bruce, did you have a question or sharing?
Yeah. I feel very uncomfortable. I noticed when you finished your talk, which I really appreciated, how quiet we were. And I was felt embarrassment. And the thought that I was raised to be a racist. And I noticed the racial tendencies in me. And not how I want to be in the world, but it's how I am. I don't overtly, at least I don't. I feel shame more than anything right now. Yeah. And that, I just wanted to say that.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that, Bruce. I think it's you know, shared by many of us. It's like we, you know, it wasn't like a feel-good talk. It was, you know, it's supposed to bring us up to that uncomfortable quality in us. And it's natural to feel that sense of shame, that sense of guilt, and realizing, wow, I was really raised this way. But as Alice, you know, was mentioning, it's really so important to unhook being racist from being a bad person, to realize that's just part of our conditioning. You know, and so if we keep that sense of bad person, we're just plugging ourselves into a more painful sense of self. It doesn't really benefit anybody. And having enough guilt and shame to motivate action is helpful, so we can actually look and see deeper and have a commitment to change, but not to the point where it paralyzes, not to the point where it creates that level of really self-definition, but to realize, oh yeah, this is just what I was taught. This is what the sea I swam in, as Deb was talking about from D'Angelo. Okay, so that's the conditions. How can I work with that? I mean, one teacher talked about you're not responsible for what your mind brings up. You're responsible for how you work with it. You know, you're sitting, something pops up. It's like, oh, no, that's a racist thought. I shouldn't have that thought. That's just your conditioning. It's already not so much predisposed, but it's really, really inclined to go a certain way. And once it pops up, that's the point of power, is how we meet it right there. How do I meet that racist thought? That's what we're focusing on tonight. How do we meet that racist thought in a way that doesn't perpetuate it, that doesn't reinforce it? And see it, you know, see it with compassion. Say, okay, let me learn from this. Let me see through it. And I think we all would benefit from more training and more exposure and ways of unpacking it. And we'll be offering some things in the next months or so once I kind of, you know, get my head above water around all the things I'm doing. And then we can, if you're curious or you're interested, I encourage you to join those. And that can be a great way to unpack that. So thank you, Sean. All right. Let me see if there's anyone in person, and we'll come back to Kathy in a second. Anyone here in person? Yes, Cheryl, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that that the work that, you know, I did last year with the board and with Ruth King made an enormous difference in the way that I view racism itself and the way that I view myself as a white person. I didn't even like calling myself a white person before. I mean, that was like, and now I just feel the importance of it. And I know that I work through a lot of defensiveness and you know, selfing and all that. And it's really, really, really beneficial. And I'm looking forward to the fact that we're going to continue to do this. Because, you know, yeah, it's really powerful work. I'm amazed kind of at, you know, where I am now. I mean, I didn't even want to read that book.
Yes, thank you, Cheryl. Yes, so that, you know, again, it's just that I think there's something very powerful about that. A year-long process and with the same group of people. Because, you know, we go through our stuff. We kind of start off kind of guarded. I don't want to read this book. I don't want to engage. And you're able to say that. And then gradually over time, things shift. And the same thing with people of color, having groups to talk about your initial thing and see that transformation that's only possible over time. It's like we're really tackling this backlog of delusion and consciousness. And it takes time to see through that. So thank you, Cheryl. All right, Kathy, would you like to go ahead?
Okay, thank you, Tim. As the others have said, I thought your talk was really profound. I very much appreciated it. And I've liked the comments too, so insightful. And I just wanted to mention this. I notice on the radio lately that KUOW, for example, is advertising they'd like to hire more people. And these pitches they put out to hire more people are specifically, they mention BIPOC people. They mention, you know, all the varieties that that are in our news nowadays. They just are putting this out this way. And I wondered I've always assumed that everyone's welcome at Sims, but maybe it doesn't go without saying. I wonder if the board has ever considered some way we might put on the website or something about people of different colors and types and everything being welcome. I don't know if that would be appropriate or not.
Yes, Kathy, thank you for sharing that. I think that's a great idea. And I think it's also important for us as an organization, particularly like the teachers and the board, to do some of this work first, because if we invite people and we're not really awake or more aware of our own racism, we're likely to cause harm in that. And so I think, you know, we're starting to develop that momentum and that kind of that intelligence really as an organization, it's starting to grow into that. And, you know, Tweri is certainly, we're very blessed to have a I think we might be the only Dharma organization that has a co-guiding teacher who's a Black woman. And so that's, she's definitely, you know, there's just a level of safety that's inherent when someone who's, you know, a BIPOC speaking in front of the group. So yeah, I think we'll do more overt, clear reaching out to different populations. So thank you for sharing that, Kathy. All right, we maybe have time for one more. See, anyone in the room like to share? A quiet room. All right, I see Lauren, you had your hand up.
Yeah, thank you so much, Tim, for this talk. I just realized I was inspired by Bruce because he kind of said what I was afraid to say, because I thought, oh, I'm going to say something ignorant or offensive. And so I just felt like I couldn't even speak on the subject, which tells me I really need to join one of these groups or explore this more, because everything that people said helped me. I just thought, oh, I really want to talk to people about this. I want to hear more. I want to be able to express myself because I don't feel comfortable or, you know, able to do that right now. So thank you for doing this and giving me the opportunity to see this. Appreciate it.
Thank you for sharing that, Lauren. That's very heartening to hear that. That is, you know, it is awkward to talk about race. We have so much shame about it. We don't want to be perceived as racist. We want to cause harm. We don't want to be, you know, unclear in our language. And yet we have to be willing to talk and to explore and stumble over and make mistakes and learn from those mistakes. And that's the only way for us to grow. I mean, it's like, you know, we're in some ways, we're, a lot of us are like infants who are crawling, but we haven't learned to walk. So we start to stand and we fall down, and you don't criticize the child for falling down. You know, so there's part of, you know, bringing a little bit of that quality of, okay, let me grow into this. Let me learn to speak about things which I've never been modeled for me, never been taught. How do you talk about race if you're a white person? If you're a BIPOC person, you know, you talk about race all the time because it's like, wow, what this person did and had this experience. There's a whole different way and different way that people of color need to be supported in the Dharma. And so we, you know, luckily we have Twary to help us hear that and work with that. All right. All right. Thank you all for this lovely evening. Let's just end with a moment or two of silence just to honor everything that's been said, all the courage to share, courage to hear. Seeing, sensing how this exploration can truly benefit all beings. May all beings be safe and protected. May all beings be peaceful. May all beings live with ease. All right. Thank you all for your engagement. And I'll be taking over the teaching baton for the next 3 months. So I hope to see you next Monday. All right. So, and we'll be sharing more about, you know, how to engage with anti-racism work and diversity work in the next, hopefully, month or so. So keep an eye out for that. All right. Thank you all.